So thank you, Judith and Jonathan. It's now your turn to share with us your comments or ask your questions. There are roving microphones. Shut up your hands, and I'll take questions in sort of groups of three or so. And if you can say who you are and keep it concise. Let's go for John first.
John Chown. One of the problems here arises from tax avoidance. Whenever there is a scheme of tax avoidance, when it gets widely publicised, a lot of press comment. The government says we must take steps to deal with this. They rush into measures. They don't take account of the law of unintended consequences. They don't take account of the second round effects. But sure enough, the measure they've taken traps some people who didn't want to trap. So they bring in relieving legislation, adding to the original legislation. That creates some new loopholes. So they add to that, and the thing just grows like that. Hence the huge number of words that have been added to the tax legislation since the days of Ken Clark, who took proper advice.
Great, thank you. I think the next question's over here. Yeah.
On Brexit, can Brexit be an unprecedented opportunity to iron out some of these accidents of history and that sort of pull and push of different principles that you referred to, John? Or will government and parliament be too busy and distracted to address any of that? I think I know what Judith thinks, but I'd like to know what some of the other speakers think. And even if it is a massive distraction, what opportunities can lie with Brexit?
Great, thank you. The gentleman down here.
From Centre for Policy Studies. We must remember that one of the consequences, one of the byproducts of simplification is improved transparency, and that isn't necessarily in HMT's interests. For example, most of the population are really pretty unfamiliar with particular rates of national insurance and so on, so one could move thresholds without population particularly noticing. My second comment before a question is to do with flow. And it's not new that there has been criticism over the last few years from Public Accounts Committee, the NAO and others, as to the very poor quality of impact assessments that are done prior to legislation being enacted, which is part of the cause of the Niagara that you're referring to. But my question is really, there cannot be a think tank in the land that hasn't made the case for merging income tax with NICs into a single earnings tax. It clearly isn't as simple as that, but really the question is primarily for John, because I know that the OTS looked at this as well. Is there any real prospect of this happening over the next 5, 10, 15 millennia?
Thanks. I think there's one more question over here, so I'll take that one. Was there a question there?
For me, yes.
Yep.
Oh, yes, I'm Nicola Ross-Martin, Ross-Martin Tax Consultancy. I think we've got to face it, in about 5 to 10 years, we won't have jobs because AI will have taken over. And AI is already taking over. We've got help bots now that can answer a lot of the questions that people get asked already. Now, it seems to me one good way of simplifying the tax system would be to actually look at the legislation from the position of AI and say to yourself, what steps do we need in this to program a computer, Google's DeepMind or whatever, to take this forward. And I think maybe looking at tax simplicity, we've been looking at it the wrong way around, and we should now look at it in another way with a mind for AI and say to ourselves, if AI was designing this, how would it do it? And what are the problems now?
Great, thank you. There's lots of issues there about tax avoidance, Brexit, will it be a distraction or will it help us? Will we actually get anything done? And can AI be the answer to our simplification dreams? So, John, do you want to start with which one of those you fancy?
Well, I fancy them all, really. But let me just touch on Brexit, if only to say that I was touched by getting a couple of messages almost the day after the referendum vote had been announced that said, now, dear OTS, sorry, I'm paraphrasing, dear OTS, now that we're leaving the EU, we can abolish VAT, can't we? Plus, HMRC got many people ringing up to say we don't have to pay it anymore, do we? I think almost the second strand of your, all of your point, Caroline, is valid. I think it is an opportunity. I mean, there's an opportunity there. But I think let's be realistic. We're going to be fairly busy. That said, you know, if we are going to have a new customs system, let's try and make sure that is simple to operate, which I know is very much in the mind of the HMRC team trying to design it. John's and Nicola's sort of almost complement each other's because, I mean, yes, I completely agree with you, John. Tax avoidance and, you know, the old leapfrog principle of sort of getting things in is a problem, you know. So should we actually, and it does sort of answer Nicola's point, do tax law in a different way? And I'm certainly mused that the days of trying to do precise tax law are finished. Should we be going for more principles-based, which could be simpler, which might answer the loopholes point? Would that then be easier for artificial intelligence? To be honest, Nicola, I thought when you started you were going to bid for stop simplifying because that would make sure that tax advisors retain a role because, you know, I know machines can now play Go, but surely they can never beat tax, you know, a well-qualified tax advisor. But, no, I mean, it's a serious challenge. And to finish up with Michael's point, you know, which millennia will we see the merging of income tax and NICs? I mean, it's like a lot of things. I think that is the goal we should be aiming for, of certainly bringing them together. Personally, I don't think we will ever merge them completely simply because you need a defined levy for various reasons. But do you actually have to have rules that give you 85 differences in the way the calculation of earnings is done for the two levies? No, I don't think so. Surely we can try and bring them together. And I think, as the OTS tried to do and tried to expose the issue, surely we ought to set that as a goal. And it would be very good if we could set it as a goal that we want to bring them together and we're going to work towards that. And therefore, any change that actually pushes them apart is rejected on those bases. And maybe if we just set that as a goal, then in maybe not in our lifetime, we will see them inching towards each other.
Okay, I think that was optimistic. So, Jonathan or Julia, do you want to pick up on either of those points?
I was meaning my lifetime. Your lifetime is,
Could I just pick up the transparency point? Because I think there is an issue there. So my experience when I was a civil servant, there was quite a strong drive towards open government and transparency, I would say, for the last 20 years. And it wasn't perfect, and it didn't mean that everything was transparent, but there was a general acceptance in government that one should be transparent and open. And I've seen quite a change in that over the last year. It's something I've blogged about because when I blogged about it in October, I wasn't sure that there were some signs, but actually everything that's happened since then has made me more convinced that there is a real issue, and I think Brexit was at the heart of that. The other thing I would say on that is that being now on the outside of government, I do find it much more difficult to keep track. If you try to track through a consultation, just try to look for the rationale, etc., and where it's got to, it's much more difficult to do that than I would ever have thought it was when I was in the civil service. And I think that's something that's worth addressing because it's a lot could be done to make it easier to access that sort of material.
And I'd just add, in terms of the Brexit point, that actually I think our attention is probably going to be more focused towards the work of the OECD. I think, you know, the sort of flows that come out of BEPS is going to rightly take our attention, particularly as we look, or we should be looking, not just to Europe, but to other territories for our trade and future wealth. But I think even if you look back to last week and the signing of the multilateral instrument, I think that sort of shows where our energies will probably be focused. I think on the transparency point, I'd agree, and I should have declared that I can also say I was once a tax inspector, so you've got three people on here who are ex-revenue. I do think there have been strides by HMRC to be more transparent. And perhaps what that'll drive is a recognition that maybe the sort of witch hunts and everybody doing bad things, we might have just about reached the high water mark in respect of that, that maybe if you actually look at the amount of scare stories that sometimes politicians react to, the things that they're reacting to are not necessarily material in the great scheme of things, and that maybe we just need to focus on making sure the regime we've got now works well and is policed well, rather than just adding more and more to that, because there's sort of a law of diminishing returns if we're not careful. The more you keep looking for problems, you will find them, but the problems tend to get smaller and smaller and less incremental.
Great, thank you. More questions? Oh, great, we have two over here. Then one at the front.
John, I think, Michelle Robinson from Deloitte. John, I think in your part of the talk, you mentioned a concern that simplification can lead to increased loopholes. My instincts would be that simplification could decrease loopholes by giving fewer opportunities for avoidance. So my question for the panel is, to what extent could simplification decrease opportunities for avoidance, and to what extent could it increase opportunities for avoidance?
I'll take the question next to you. Thank you.
Rachel McAleen from Deloitte, simultaneous hand raising going on. I was just wondering what the panel's views were on the personal savings allowance and dividend allowance, which on the surface sounded incredibly simple when George Osborne explained them at the budget speech, but are causing endless misery to anybody trying to do a tax return, including HMRC.
Great, thank you. And a question at the front?
Yeah, Philip Ross, I'm a freelancer. My question's actually, I think you've all mentioned freelancing and the Taylor Review and the huge growth in self-employment, actually. And the fact is, actually, that it's going to need a tax response, not a tinkering of the response, because the last tinkering we had was IR35, which was probably what you were talking about, actually, which has led one thing on top of another and actually making it more and more complicated. We're stuck, as a freelancer, with people actually, you work for yourself, actually, and you take a limited company, then you get accused of tax avoidance because you're using a corporate structure to do it, but you have to work that way. And I know other people who are actually self-employed and actually employ people, but they're not limited. So we're kind of stuck in this sort of strange loop. And then we've got all these people now working in the gig economy and actually coming through with worker status and that. And I'd be interested to know what ideas that the panel would have of actually how we could address this.
Great. Lots of interesting loopholes, misery of dividend allowance, and gig economy. Do you want to start with that?
Dealing with the loopholes point, I think I just put that down as a risk. And I acknowledge it as a risk that if you do simplify, because obviously a lot of the complexity, you know, it harks back to John Chown's initial point, you know, you get complexity because you've tried to block loopholes and so on and so forth. I think my answer to you is, you know, what your challenge is in effect, that if you do simplification properly, well, it can potentially stop the loopholes, but, you know, I'll put my hands up, it's got the risks. I mentioned trivial benefits. I was, you know, very much in favour of bringing in a trivial benefits exemption and painted some ways of trying to stop it becoming loophole driven, and so that came to pass. You know, I'm slightly disappointed to find that there are schemes around where people are trying to exploit it. So I suppose human ingenuity, whether, you know, sentient or AI, is always going to be looking for the loopholes, and all I can say is we've got to try and manage it. Personal savings allowance and dividend allowance. Oh, God, don't get me started. to be honest, I'm in a. I'm glad you acknowledge that it's difficult for HMRC, because putting my HMRC hat on, yes, it is. You know, there's been well publicised difficulties in computation software because, you know, these things are inordinately complex. And I would say that, you know, they needed to be thought through a little better before they were bunged on the statute book. I think I better stop there before I condemn myself. Philip, your point on freelancing. Yes, I mean, we need a proper response to that. And the OTS certainly tried to sort of come up with some ideas on employment status and pointed some ways. Did a paper on the gig economy. You know, the stumbling block in many ways is, of course, whereas life recognises a lot of states, be it employed, self-employed, freelancer, worker, all sorts of things, tax tends to be rather binary, employed, self-employed. And it's a very interesting question as to whether you should possibly have a third way within the tax system. Or, of course, and this harks back to income tax and NICs, you should, as the OTS pointed out, just try and take the heat out of the system by bringing the systems together. I think it's Canada that really doesn't have a problem in this regard, because actually, you know what, whether you're employed or self-employed, the tax burden really doesn't make much difference. So actually what drives it is what you want to be. But I genuinely don't have a simple answer, but I'd like to think that this is something that's really going to get properly debated rather than the sort of knee-jerk reaction that you sort of pointed to.
I mean, I'd just say on the Taylor review, I mean, the one positive thing that's come out of the reshuffle so far is that David Gawke, who is a somebody who is respected well in the tax world, going to DWP, I think, is of some use, because the DWP will clearly be involved with the output from the Taylor review. And I think at least you will have a minister, Secretary of State in that department, who, whilst he won't necessarily lead on tax, and clearly Matthew Taylor is keen to avoid saying, well, his review is about tax, but clearly it's got to cover off aspects of that. We'll have a minister in the DWP who at least will be informed about some of these issues, in addition to whatever the Treasury will come out of. But again, you know, let's face it, the whole issue relating to service companies is, you know, be careful what you wish for. People wanted to see a greater, politicians want to see a greater uptake in self-employment, people kind of getting on their bikes and using their best endeavours, plus the gig economy and the flexibility that brings with it, as I alluded to before. And if you've got a tax structure that favours a particular structure, then people will follow that. It's like water finding its natural course. I have to smile, because the last time I was on this stage was at an event to talk about the outcome from the 2015 general election, and the speaker was Diane Abbott, all four of her, and the host was Isabel Oakeshott, and she was very happily talking about her own use of her service company, and said, of course, there's no benefit whatsoever in having a service company, and the assembled accountants and tax advisors in the room decided all of them immediately to give her a business card and explain that she come and speak to her.
I just wanted to go back to this point about simplification and avoidance, because, I mean, as John said, actually, if you have a simple tax system, that ought to reduce the opportunity for avoidance. I do think that one issue that comes in here is the wish for certainty. And I think that can, if you have black letter rules, that can actually contribute to avoidance. And I'm reminded of a project quite a few years back now, when we tried to adopt a style of principles-based drafting, which was intended both to reduce the opportunities for avoidance and also to be simpler. The problem was, though, that everybody piled in and wanted their own little black-letter carve-outs, so it really kind of eroded the principles. So, you know, I think there's some real challenges there with people wanting to have every eventuality catered for, which can play both into avoidance and into the simplification agenda.
Can I just pick up on that? Because when you were talking about that, Judith, I wondered if you were going to mention the statutory residence test, which I think is a classic example where the broadly simple rule got so many bells and whistles put on it because of so many examples put up. And I think, if going back to those four principles of avoiding complexity I put up, one of the underlying messages within that is actually be prepared to resist special interest pleading. And that's, you know, me as a sort of, God, I'm going native in HMRC or whatever. But it is, you really see it. All these things come up and all these particular instances come up. You've got to resist them sometimes, haven't you? Although, again, of course, that's difficult. And it sometimes requires a tough decision that you're not going to accept all the possible problems.
Great, more questions from you guys. Let's start with Paul. And I'll try and do something this side of the room, so I think it's pretty heavy.
Paul Johnson, IFS. To follow up really on something, Jonathan, you said in answer to not the set of questions we just had, but the one before that, you said you thought we might have hit the high water mark, I think were your words, of concern about corporate misbehaviour and so on taxation. I just wondered whether you'd like to reflect on that in the context of the Labour Party manifesto and the considerable support that seemed to achieve, because I certainly didn't read that as one of our main parties being satisfied on that front. And I wonder whether the panel would like to say anything about their thoughts on the impact of implementing that manifesto for simplification.
Great. there's a question behind Paul.
Mike Thexton. I was very interested that John highlighted the need for administrative simplicity as well as technical simplicity, not just looking at the rules, but how you pay your tax. I was just wondering that if, what you think about in 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 years' time, will we think that making tax digital was a simplification or not?
Great, thank you. I'll just put it on the guy who's... Yep.
Kevin Slevin. I proposed to the Treasury that if a business wishes to employ labour and its business model is based on that assumption, then everything's fine. Whatever route they use is fine. But if they want to claim a deduction in arriving at their profits, if they have failed to operate PAYE, legally or illegally, they cannot deduct that payment for labour. So it cuts through all the different categories, whether they're self-employed, employed, and IR 35 is completely out the window. No employer will be able to claim a deduction unless PAYE is operated for labour. I know there's various issues about independent consultants and so on and so forth. Could you comment on that, please?
Great, I'm going to just squeeze in two last ones. I've got one here and then one at the back of the room. Yep.
Thank you. Tom Papworth, from currently the Council of Mortgage Lenders. How do you deal with the fact that a lot of the issues around tax simplification, like a lot of economic policy in general, is deeply counterintuitive? How do you persuade ministers, let alone the public, that everything they believe is wrong?
Okay, this guy at the back.
Yep. Hi, Rory Meakin, Taxpayers Alliance. Judith Knott said earlier that she believed that consultation was leading to more complexity and offered a greater role perhaps for the OTS in tackling that. I wondered if what the thoughts of the rest of the panel were, and indeed any other thoughts that Judith had on other ways, further ways to tackle that as well.
Great, thank you, Vin. Edward. Sorry, can we get Edward a microphone? Thank you.
Edward Troop, HMRC. So I was going to sit silent, okay. But the reference to MTD has provoked me into saying something. Can I first of all say what many people have said about what great work John and the OTS have done, and delighted that Paul Morton's there. I do feel that there's a sort of slight sense of fatalism here that, you know, it'll never be simplified. And to some extent that's true, but I don't think that means that the work of the OTS isn't incredibly important to just keep checking the tide. And the points about the flow, I think, are absolutely right. So, great that we're having this discussion. John briefly mentioned human ingenuity, and I think Judith mentioned the statutory residence test. And it does seem to me that actually, we do have to, as we always have to in HMRC, account for the ingenuity of individuals. You know, as Immanuel Kant said, out of the crooked timber of humanity, nothing straight was ever made. So, you've got to be realistic about what a perfect tax system would look like. And I think responding both to the points about AI and the jibe about MTD, which, of course, I'm happy to rebut at great length if you want me to. Actually, I think there is something here, and I think the OTS is already in this space of thinking not just how can the system be simpler, but how can we use technology, how can we use good systems. And I absolutely believe that MTD is the first step on this way to make the overall experience of the taxpayer simpler and easier. And I just sort of ask the panel to reflect on how they think the technological and the tax technical solutions to simplification fit together in the face of human ingenuity.
Great, thank you. So loads of great questions there. Jonathan, do you want to start with the Labour manifesto and tax avoidance? Are we at the high watermark?
Well, I still maintain that I think we are. Not to say that there aren't things that happen that shouldn't happen, but you asked me specifically to comment in the context that obviously been a high increase in the vote for Labour. I don't think that people voted for Labour because they said that they were going to clamp down on tax avoidance. I think there are a whole host of reasons why they voted for Labour. And again, without being too controversial, it's very easy, isn't it, to make lots of promises that you can fund from some sort of magic money tree that you can shake it at will. Although in terms of being balanced, all political parties always point to the fact there is this money tree called tax avoidance that can be shaken and cash will fall off it to fund their various policies. I would actually recommend, if you've not read it, they're reading Paul's article in the Times this morning, which I thought was an excellent article about the balance between the parties. We don't need to be too extreme on either side, and there is an opportunity for consensus. I suppose the other thing I would just say, really, whilst I'm talking, is just on the question of MTD and technology, that in many respects, and it goes back to the points made regarding artificial intelligence earlier on, you know, I'm sitting here now as a 54-year-old, having been brought up in a tax world that was very, very analog. And the very fact is that the way people transact, you know, you look at the amount of cashless transactions that take place, the way in which we document information, the way in which we can capture and analyze and interrogate data, that pace of the world is changing too. And I think that in many respects, the way in which MTD ultimately can work will not just be by our willingness to embrace or not, but it will be about leveraging of the technological solutions that enable us to draw the information out that goes to effectively create pro forma returns and assessments.
Great.
Other views?
Judith,
on the Labour manifesto point, I think that what I would just like to do is to compare the situation in the UK with some other countries. So I find it quite striking that in Ireland, for example, there is a pretty wide acceptance of the low corporation tax rates. So just to give you an example, my daughter's flatmate is pretty far to the left on the political spectrum, but she doesn't see a problem with the Irish tax rate. We do seem to have a bit of an obsession with this, I think, in the UK. The other system I've been looking at recently is the German tax system. Some of the avoidance schemes that you see in Germany they take you back to the sort of technology that we saw in the UK in the 60s and 70s and are really quite shocking. We would not have anything like that now, and if we did, it would be disclosed to HMRC and stopped before it started. And so I think we have, in international terms, I think that what's taken hold in the UK is a narrative that's a little bit unbalanced. And I would just say that my comment about the tax code not extending over the next 5 years is very much in the context of a minority government, as it looks like we will have. And I think if we had a Labour government, yes, there would be challenges all round, I think, to keep up with all of that.
Just add one rider, actually, just in terms of the mention of the Republic of Ireland. Of course, we'll have our own 12.5% tax rate, probably in 2018 if the DUP get their way, and have a soft border between the north and the south. So 12.5% coming to an address near you soon. Sorry, John.
John, do you want to finish up on making tax digital?
Well, I'll comment on a few, and then perhaps we'll finish on MTD. I won't comment on the Labour manifesto. While we're mentioning manifestos, I was struck by the SNP manifesto, which made a specific commitment to get behind OTS recommendations. It kind of worries me slightly that they lost so many seats. hey-ho. Don't believe everything you read in manifestos, etc. A few of the other things. I mean, Kevin, it's an interesting idea, isn't it? I mean, in many ways, what you're proposing is a sort of simple cut the crap sort of rule. Let's go for it. Does that pass all the Adam Smith type fairness test? I don't know. But, I think you're right to propose that sort of thing. Just as, going back to the first question we had on avoidance, I just feel we've got to try different things, because otherwise it's going to get more and more complex. The trouble is, people are going to find that unpalatable. And, of course, it then comes to Nicola's artificial intelligence, because they'll be working out, with the corporation tax rate at what it is, it's cheaper to do, to scrap the corporation tax deduction and forget PAYE. So I think be careful what you wish for, as somebody else has already said. Tom's point was very interesting. How do you persuade people that things are wrong, or to really embrace change? And I think, that's reflects some of the things I was on about. If we're really believing in simplification, you've got to be prepared to challenge received wisdom, challenge that choice is good, giving options is good, and that actually, coming up and saying this is the way the system is going to work. It's going to be an automatic, not a choice. Maybe that's better. Rory, you raised a subject dear to my heart on consultation, which is, you quite rightly said, you know, Judith said, OTS needs to get more involved. Of course, OTS Mark II, you know, the statutory basis of OTS can now do that. And I know it's something I did a bit of chipping in, is into the consultation process. It's an interesting thing, you know, just exactly how that is going to work out. And I think Paul and David and others in OTS are going to be sort of just trying to work out how best to influence on that. Because in many ways, you know, OTS may be there sort of holding the ring and trying to say to HMRC, you know what, don't forget that if you bring in all those tweaks, that's going to make it more complex and stiffen the sinews. And then actually, you know what, remember simplifications. You know, the lovers of Greek history know that, you know, somebody had somebody whispering in their ear, remember so-and-so. Well, this is sort of remember simplification. I do want to talk about MTD, but anybody else want to comment on anything before? Mike's is a very fair point. You know, what are we going to think of in 10 or 15 years' time? Sorry, I forget your exact timescale you put in, Mike. Essentially, I'm with Edward that technology has to be the way forward, that we've got to be more technologically savvy with the way we do tax. And I mean, I think that's suffusing a lot of what we've suggested in OTS in the past, partly in terms of sort of having regard to what would make it easier to operate technically rather than having to sort of actually get the brain out and all and do things. So undoubtedly going for technology, going for the principles of doing it digitally, surely that has to be the right way. Surely the objective of MTD has to be entirely correct. My concern, and I'm sure many people's concern, is things like the speed and can we actually do it? Can we get there in the time? So I don't think the direction's an issue. It's the speed and how we get there. And, you know, needless to say, we want to, certainly with my simplification hat on, I want to make sure that the end result is simplification all round. I come back to that. It's got to work for everybody, not just HMRC, not just agents, not just taxpayers, not even just the computer who ultimately is going to have to do it. It's got to work all round.
Great. So that's out of time. So let me just wrap up by saying thank you all for coming and engaging. Hopefully you can stay and join us downstairs for a drink. But for now, thank you to all of our speakers, especially for John, for sharing their thoughts with us.